Council again, good morning. As you can see, six members of the court are here in the courtroom. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx.
Good morning, Justice Miller Lerman here by WebEx. Thank you.
And she can see and hear you, and she is capable of asking questions if she so chooses. When you are presenting, when you are not presenting, please keep your masks on. When you are presenting, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand you. Do you have any questions before we begin? With that, thank you very much. Mr. Mers, good morning to you.
Morning, Dave.
May it please the court, my name is Douglas Mers. I'm the Richardson County attorney in Falls City, Nebraska. This is an appeal from the County Court of Richardson County, Nebraska regarding an inheritance tax determination involving an individual by the name of Gail Marsh, who was a resident of Richardson County, Nebraska. Mr. Marsh, when he filed his petition and eventually his worksheet, listed a company by the name of Marquesa LLC, which was a closely owned family business that they had appraised the inside assets or the value of the company of in the amount of approximately $13 million. And the petitioners, who were the two daughters of the decedent, were asking the court to value that interest at slightly over 15%. Again, from the standpoint, Richardson County, we objected that valuation, and we had a trial on the issues, and the County Court of Richardson County, Nebraska, determined that that 15 or 16% valuation was appropriate based upon the evidence that was offered, and likewise, there was an additional discount of 25%. From that order, Richardson County has appealed to this court alleging certain errors. Those consist of the fact that the transfer documents that the decedent used in his attempt to transfer his interest in the corporation, and the corporation was a predecessor to as a limited liability company that is a predecessor to another company by the name of Marsh Company LTD.
Successor to
that organization. Our position is that
when was that transfer allegedly made?
Well, there was a number of transfers. The evidence will indicate that the plan of the decedent appeared to be that he would transfer small fractional shares to his children and his grandchildren and his spouses that he claimed to be under the federal gift tax exemption on a yearly basis that reduced his ownership interest. The only problem was that the county raised was the fact that he had, according to the evidence, he had actually transferred not only Marsh Company LTD shares, but also this Marquesa LLC shares to a trust that he created in 1988, whereby he established that his two daughters were the co-trustees. And the evidence indicates that during the time the daughters were co-trustees from 1988 up to the time that Mr. Marsh passed away, to be frank, they absolutely did nothing in regard to being trustees of that trust.
Marsh Company, was it ever placed inside the trust?
Yes. Now, I realize that the Appellee's brief says that those shares were never, ever put into the trust, but I would point to the court's attention to the evidence, in particular Exhibit 40 and also Exhibit 47, which the Appellee's presented as evidence to indicate who the owners were from one year to another. And you can see on those membership ledgers, it shows that the Gail Marsh Trust was always the owner of Mars Company LTD and also Marquesa, and also the Sarah Marsh, who's the daughter, testified in her testimony on page 105. She specifically stated that those shares of Mars Company LTD were in the trust. So, I mean, I realize that the appellees have indicated that's not true, but the evidence that they presented indicates that it was in the trust. And also, as part of their brief, they indicated they have a schedule as to what the fractional shares are, and they show that Gail Marsh was a trustee of apparently this trust. Well, there's no evidence whatsoever to support that. He was a settler, that's exactly right, but he was not the trustee. So, and the county's position is since the trust actually owned the shares of stock of Marsh Company LTD and Marquesa LLC, then since they held the legal titles to the shares, they were the only ones that could execute the transfer documents to any other parties. The settler himself, as to the transfer documents he signed all of those personally. He didn't direct, you know, the trustees to transfer the documents. The trustees never executed any transfer documents. But he, you know, apparently he was treating those companies as though he owned them himself, which he did not do. And like I indicated, that, you know, this is a trust that was created in 1988. That, you know, that none of the or the two trustees were the daughters. They were always the trustees up till the time the decedent passed away, and they let, you know, their father run the business. So even if the court wants to give some consideration to the fact that he made these invalid transfers on the theory that he attempted to make some a gift, the other issue then becomes is since he had complete control over all the assets of these companies, then he maintained possession and control over the property, which I would suggest to the court that according to the Inheritance Act statutes and case law, and even under federal law, that those assets or the total value of those assets are subject to Nebraska inheritance tax.
So your argument is that the county, as the recipient of inheritance taxes, wins either way, whether or not the property was in the trust or not in the trust?
We're saying that, you know, if the court's going to determine that those documents he signed were effective transfers to transfer the interest of those shares that were in the trust, which is what the county court did, then I'm saying is if you're going to follow what the county court did, then they still fail because the decedent still maintained possession and control over all those assets. So, I mean,
the decedent control the assets of Marquesa in his capacity as manager of the LLC?
Well, that's right. And not only did he control those assets, but he was, you know, he possessed those assets and he enjoyed all those assets. We're not saying that he did, you know, because of his control over all the assets, that's the reason why it should all be included value-wise for estate tax purposes, because
you're not suggesting that his role as manager is sufficient to bring those into the estate as a retained interest?
Oh, no. I think that, I mean, since he ran, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think because he ran these businesses, you know, during this whole almost 30-year period of time, and because of that, you know, he was in possession and control as a manager or whatever positions he had, that does bring it back into the state for inheritance tax purposes.
Is there a difference between the decedent having run these operations as in control, as distinguished from possession of those assets?
Well, I think, you know, the law is, you know, possession or control or the enjoyment of the property. So I think all those words get you to the same place that he, you know, even though he attempted to transfer his interest, he still maintained control and enjoyment, did all of the day the activities of whatever property issues would come up. I think all of those things allow the assets to come back into the state. That's assuming that the transfers that he made were valid, which our position is they were not.
Did the assets generate income?
Yes, there's some income tax returns in there that show, you know, they generated income.
Who received the income off of the assets?
Well, they filed tax returns indicating that, the people that he transferred these interests, they filed income tax returns showing that, they picked up a percentage of the income. I would just suggest to the court that those returns are invalid. They're not correct just because they were not valid transfers to begin with. So they had no ownership interest in the entities at the time those tax returns were filed. And it's just a matter, with the tax returns, it just bootstraps up this whole messed up, attempt to deprive any responsibility for the inheritance tax is due. And I see I'm out of time, so.
I know that the red light is flashing, but I want to be clear about this. You're not raising, are you, a factual issue? You're raising an issue of law. You're claiming that he simply, Mr. Mars, the decedent, simply could not, in his capacity as settlor, transfer the beneficial rights to those fractional shares of Marquesa.
That's right, since the title to those shares were in the trust
itself. That's a question of law, not a question of fact.
I agree with you.
All right, thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mercure, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I want to just start with the aspect of the so-called invalid transfers that Mr. Mers has raised. Judge Moshman, in his opinion, addressed that, and it's made clear in his opinion, as well as I think from the documents you received, that the trust agreement itself granted the settlor the authority to withdraw or add property to that trust at any time. And I think he certainly looked at that. In addition, under the trust code of the state of Nebraska, it's clear that the trustees have an obligation and duty to follow the directions of the settlor. In this situation, both cases, I think it's clear that the...
What you're arguing is that this is not a question of substance, but a question of form.
That'd be true, yes. He signed numerous assignments as the settlor of his trust, and the county is maintaining or claiming that those are invalid transfers. Judge Moshman obviously disagreed, indicated that both the trust agreement itself as well as the trust code grants settlors authority to do that, and the trustees are obligated to follow the direction of that trustee. In addition, the court looked at the fact that it met all the requirements of a valid gift or inter vivos gift. In this situation, there was acceptance, or there was an intent to deliver, there was an acceptance, and it was also received by those parties. And so, in this situation,
if we were to affirm this case and side with you, would this create a precedent for any large estate or anyone who has a great deal of money to evade inheritance taxes in the state of Nebraska, at least?
I don't believe so. I believe that if you're following the law in this situation, if you adhere to what Judge Moshman ruled in this particular case, I want to touch on a couple of things, and I think it becomes more simple if the court looks at the facts. And I'm going to run down through this so you understand how specifically we came to this point. Mr. Marsh created the trust in November 4 of 1998. It was unfunded. There was never any funding of that trust until 2007.
Did Marsh Company ever go into the trust?
It did not. And it was in part because of item that was put together by my client's spouse has put together a form that we thought was reflected what the ownership was, and that's where the trust item was referred to. But if you look at the other evidence that's been received, you'll note that the Marsh Company itself was formed December 1 of 1998 as a limited partnership. Gail Marsh was the only member of that at that time. He began making transfers from Marsh Company Limited to his family members from 1998 through 2002. In that time period, there were three separate federal gift tax returns filed that were received into evidence to show that he made those transfers himself individually. So those transfers all took place, and by the end of 2002, he had divested himself of a large part of Marsh Company Limited. Then in 2007, the family formed Marquesa LLC, and Marquesa LLC merged with Marsh Company Limited in 2007, so that was the end of Marsh Company Limited. And thereafter, he transferred all of his ownership interests in Marquesa to his trust in 2008. And thereafter, beginning in 2008, he made transfers from his trust to family members of his interest in Marquesa. It's important that the court understand that sequence, because that's really what the situation is. So all the transfers that were made from Marsh Company Limited from 1988 through 2002 were done by him individually. They obviously wouldn't require approval of trustees, because they were not in the trust at that time. Thereafter, all the transfers were being made by him as settlor of his trust, and he continued to make those transfers through 2013. As the court noted, in this particular situation, there were no transfers made in the 3 years preceding his death. And so there were obviously no transfers made in contemplation of death. And that's really the test in this situation for the court to look at, I think, is whether or not there were any transfers made during that time.
I beg your pardon. The substance of this, of your last explanation, if I understand it, is that all the transfers were made before the funding of the trust. Is that correct?
No, the transfers were made from his trust, made transfers of his interest in Marquesa after from 2008 through 2013.
I beg your pardon. Of the initial LLC, those transfers had been made prior to the funding of the trust?
Correct. Marsh Company Limited transfers were being made. Yes, they were being made before he ever established Marquesa.
Thank you.
One of the concerns that I have in respect to this particular case is that the county's brief indicates that the county attorney must assume the role basically of the Internal Revenue Service due to the large federal state tax exemption that's been granted to the estates of decedents by the federal government. If the court would adopt the county's position in this situation, they're going back 20 years previous to the decedent's death in this case to try to dig up or divulge or require assets to be brought back into the estate that obviously should not be put in that position. And I think if you would follow the county's position in this situation, it would be creating a great deal of uncertainty and angst amongst all Nebraskans about what transfers would be effective upon their deaths, because really that's what they're trying to do in this situation. We're trying to take an estate of $1,300,000 or thereabouts and try to make it into a $12 or $13 million estate, and only for the purpose of trying to get additional inheritance taxes from the estate of the decedent. And I don't think that's something that should be encouraged by this court or encouraged in this situation, because obviously, as indicated, the inheritance tax proceeding in this case took place over 2 years. I think the county complains at one point in time in their brief about them not being entitled to discovery and being denied the chance for discovery, additional discovery. Their motion itself that they filed for continuance didn't even request that. It indicated that they wanted to conduct more discovery, and then they came about later and said, well, we really wanted to have additional time for our expert to look at transfers that were being made.
Counsel, I want to, the chief asked a question about would this create a precedent about evading taxes? If the transfers had been purported transfers made, but were never recognized on the books, and the recipients never recognized the income or were never treated as the owners, that would be the sort of scheme that we would worry about, wouldn't it?
Certainly it would. But in this situation, I think we've submitted all the tax returns to show, and the Schedule K-1s to show that the recipients, the persons that were assigned these ownership interests, were treated as taxpayers, and they were required to report that on their own individual income tax returns. And they did so in this situation. They did that for many years. So it wasn't like someone simply created this and then nobody ever filed tax returns or reported their income. They did. And so in this situation, any attempt to indicate that this was some guise for avoiding taxes, these transfers had taken place from 1998 up through 2013. So there's a long period of time in which he's making transfers, divesting himself of ownership interests in these entities, and it certainly should be regarded as appropriate and basically a good estate plan that he adopted at that point in time. That's really all he was doing.
I beg your pardon, and is your argument then is it's appropriate in an environment when the exemption for the size of the estate was a lower number?
Right. Well, I think it's a question of how far you're going to go. If you're going to say that we're going to go back 20 years and try to set aside transfers of this nature, I think that's really a very difficult road to go down, because I think a lot of folks in Nebraska that have adopted this type of planning as part of their estate planning would be penalized for doing that. Really, that's what you're saying. You're going to allow things to be brought up for more than 20 years ago. We went through 2 years of discovery in this case. Over 119 documents were provided in response to discovery requests. And in this situation, I think the county even complained that they weren't given proper notice in this situation. They appeared for at least 12 hearings that I was at. And I think that it's clear to me they had ample notice of the proceedings.
The county court reduced the minority discount that your clients attempted to use to 25%. And as I read the appellant's brief, they're not arguing about the amount of the minority discount, and you did not prosecute regarding the reduction of the minority discount. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was based on the testimony of the county's own expert about the minority discount they would apply.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yeah, Your
Honor. There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments in this case, and actually concludes arguments for today. So the court is adjourned, and you are excused. Counsel, when you leave the courtroom, please leave by the side door to my left, and please continue to social distance and use those masks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.